conventions for them. But my keen interest in the subject of tidelands got me involved in that, and I got acquainted with a then city attorney who was Irving Smith, who was extremely knowledgeable on it and had been one of the stalwarts in that fight. And I kept talking about things I thought could be done to turn the tide. And ultimately, the Harbor Department agreed, and we did a lot of things, such as establishing a PR office in Washington, because all of the news, it was easier to generate news and publicity from Washington, D.C. than from Long Beach, California. We worked with the states of Texas and Louisiana and Florida, but primarily Texas and Louisiana. We hired a PR guy in Washington by the name of McAdams. We worked with all of the senators and congressmen favorable to our side of the issue. And I ultimately was spending a great deal of time, months at a time, in Washington, doing things such as speeches for senators and congressmen, news releases for them. There was a National Association of Attorneys General, which had been on record in behalf of states' rights in this issue, and we worked with them. They had a man in Washington by the name of Walter Johnson. I worked with Walter. But we used everything we could to encourage prominent senators and congressmen to take strong stands, issue strong statements. And we worked back from Washington into the districts of various congressmen and senators to build up public support so they too could support this issue. And first time the bill was passed, Truman vetoed it. It was passed again in 52, and Eisenhower, we had convinced Ike to put it in the platform. We had it in the Republican Party platform. And Ike agreed that, yes, he would sign a bill if we passed it, he supported. Well, we got it through, and he signed it. And that picture over there was Nixon signing it as the presiding officer of the Senate before it went to Eisenhower for final signature. So that was done, and I came back to Long Beach, and I didn't like some of the things that seemed to be happening, and I wasn't too happy anymore with some of the members of the Harbor Commission. And I decided I had used up my effectiveness pretty well. So I exercised the 30-day cancellation clause. And I had heard rumors, too, at that time that the state of California now was going to turn on Long Beach. I failed to mention the officials of the state of California. We worked with Pat Brown, who was then Attorney General. And his specialist was a guy by the name of Everett Mattoon, M-A-T-T-O-O-N. And so we had a good, close working relationship, both with the Attorney General's office and the state. We tried to work with Earl Warren, who was then governor, but not to any great degree of success. And we never could get Governor Warren to come to Washington and do lobbying on behalf of the state. And Goody Knight was then lieutenant governor, and so we called on Goody, and Goody was just, he jumped into the fray with both feet. And he and I became good buddies and went to Washington together a couple of times and did an awful lot of lobbying. It was easy for him to get access to senators, being a state lieutenant governor. Another chap in the California Senate was Senator Arthur Breed, Jr. of Oakland. And he established the Tidelands Committee, and I think I gave you a copy of his committee's report, which I wrote under contract for that committee. And also Ed Ainsworth of the LA Times freelanced and did part of it too. So we had good working relationships with the state legislature, with our own congressmen, with our own senators. Bill Nolan was senator. Kiko was, let me think, I'm trying to, I'm getting mixed up because in the beginning, Senator Downey, a Democrat, was involved, and Downey was on our side. You get brainstorms like this. Nixon was running for the Senate at that time. Downey was the senator. I had heard that Downey wanted to retire. I cooked up the brainstorm that we would have the Harbor Department hire Downey, give him a job so that he could retire from the Senate, that then Governor Warren, a Republican, would appoint Dick Nixon, U.S. Senator, to replace Downey, which would then enable Nixon to go into the election as the incumbent senator. So they did hire Downey. He did resign. But they never could get Warren to appoint Nixon to the Senate. I'm trying to think how, I can't remember how Kiko got in the Senate or when he went in. But he never was, in my mind, Kiko was never as strong a battler. Nolan was pretty good. Nolan was a strong man on it. Our theory on having Downey on board was he, as a former United States Senator, had access to the Senate floor and the Senate cloakroom. And he could be on the floor or in the cloakroom working constantly with the senators on our side. And he was very effective. He was very good. He drove us up a wall occasionally, but he was a very flighty guy. Yeah, he was a very strange man. But he did his job and then helped carry the day when we finally got the legislation through and signed. But it meant a great deal to Long Beach and to California because Uncle Sam was contesting that. In the case of Long Beach, on the Bay of San Pedro, and we talked about this at lunch, I think, and I gave you a map showing you the different lines that had been proposed. They contended that the Bay of San Pedro was defined by a line running from Point Furman on the west to the foot of Cherry Avenue on the east, which would have thrown the bulk of the oil field outside the bay, if that were to be decided to be the bay. Because the U.S. Supreme Court had said the state did retain ownership of its bays and inland waters, but anything other than that went to Uncle Sam. So that's why they were drawing this arbitrary line. And we had that constant battle on what was a bay and trying to prove what the historical treatment of San Pedro Bay had been. At one point, I talked to Harbor Commission of putting up a big billboard right on the beach at the foot of Cherry with a great big fist grabbing the oil resources and warning the beachgoers that they could be trespassers on federal land if the federal government prevailed. So we do all kinds of propagandizing on the issue. Yeah. I think I lost my train of thought somewhere in there. But.
Well, you were talking about what you did after.
I jumped back into. I had left the Harbor Commission, and I remembered the Downey episode and the fact that we had hired the Harbor Board had hired him. And the Harbor Commission at that time had the money and the control of the money and the control of the tidelands so that they were the moving force rather than the city council.
Yeah, because they were the ones
that benefited. That is correct. And they operated the oil field. In other words, they developed the oil field and contracted for its development with a private company. So anyway, we'd won the battle. And everybody should have been happy, and there were rumors that the state was going to come after us. Well, I'll give you one, just another little sidelight before I left the Harbor Commission employ. Pat Brown wanted a tour of the tidelands and came down, and I was given the job of escorting him along the coastline and showing him the resources, the boundary lines, the oil wells, and the legal theories on which we were proceeding. And when we got off here, we took him back to the Harbor Department building, and he met with some of the harbor commissioners. And I don't think I'll ever forget it. And he said, well, what are you guys going to do with all this money? He said, you can't gold plate all the doorknobs in Long Beach. He said, you know, I represent the state of California, and the state ought to have a piece of it. And one of the harbor commissioners, Angus Frosty Martin, spoke up and said, yes, but Pat, Long Beach is part of the state of California, too. You represent us also. But the seeds were being sown that there's too much money for Long Beach. And I think I gave you, did I give you a Saturday Evening Post article?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was the thing that began to trigger the assault on Long Beach, the town with too much money. So anyway, won the federal battle. I canceled my contract with the Harbor Commission.
You said there were some people on the Harbor Commission you weren't getting along with?
We don't need that for history.
Oh, okay.
There were more personality clashes.
Okay.
Nothing of substance.
It wasn't because you had a different philosophy?
No, I just didn't like one individual in particular.
Okay.
I was tired of it. I told them in my farewell speech that I had heard these rumors that the state of California was going to come after Long Beach. I remember Irving Smith, the city attorney, saying, just let them try. Because the city had used the legal theory that Irving had evolved for developing the oil field. And he thought he was on sound legal ground. Before we'd even passed the submitted plans bill, the city was eager to spend this money on upland. Puppy, look out. Now, they had passed a charter amendment freeing half the money to be used for uplands developments. And this was the thing that we on which we were attacked. And ultimately, a taxpayer filed a lawsuit by the name of Felix Mallon alleging that. That legislation was not constitutional, that the money should remain really in the Harbor Department and not be spent on city things like parks and fire department systems and airport and whatever. There were a whole bunch of stuff in there.
Could you explain the legal theory behind all that?
Did we talk about it much? Okay, yeah. The Long Beach obtained ownership of Thai lands by a grant from the state of California, the state legislature, signed by the governor, in 1911. That grant gave the city everything within the state's boundary, submerged lands boundaries, up to the state's 3-mile limit. In the contest over that legislation, or over that grant, in subsequent years, what you know? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The various state court decisions held in effect that the state gave everything it owned to Long Beach, that they reserved nothing back, they didn't retain the mineral rights, and that Long Beach owned this in fee simple, which in the law means that Long Beach had every single aspect of ownership in those tied and submerged lands, including the oil. So that, did you want to ask a question, huh? So anyway, this is a state. All the court decisions at the state level were that the state had given us everything and held nothing, reserved nothing back for itself. Long Beach then passed this charter amendment freeing half the money for uplands, and they did it on the same theory that was used to enable the city to drill for oil, the Harbor Department to drill for oil. And that was, in essence, this, that... So, the original theory whereby they drilled the oil was the Harbor Commission would make a finding that a particular oil well drill site, in the specific boundaries of it, that that was no longer needed for the purposes of the Tidelands Trust, and therefore was in essence surplus to it in the foreseeable future. That enabled them to use that land to drill an oil well. And that's how all the oil wells down in the Tidelands area, with every single one of them under the Harbor's jurisdiction, there was a finding that that parcel of land no longer was necessary for the purposes of the trust. Now, this legal principle, too, was tested in the courts and found out in the state Supreme Court. So, the reason that if you could declare the land free from the terms of the trust, certainly any small incident of the land, such as oil or revenues from oil, that was only a part of it, that part could as well be freed. If you could free the whole thing, certainly you could free part of it. So that was the legal theory by which, on which they proceeded to free the money, to free half of it for use on uplands. The charter amendment went through, the city voters approved it. At that time, the charter amendments had to be approved by the legislature and the governor before they could become valid. Our two assemblymen, I think it was Bill Graham and Herb Clarkson, ran it through the legislature, and the legislature okayed it. Earl Warren, the then governor, insisted that a delegation from Long Beach come to Sacramento and assure him personally that they would spend this money only for capital improvements. They would not use it for overhead, for just operating expenses. So a delegation was put together that went up there and did talk to the governor. A guy by the name of Harold Hines from the newspaper, I think, went in that group at that time. And the sort of city officials. Based on that assurance, Earl Warren then signed that, and the charter amendment became law, and half the money theoretically was free. The city didn't spend it, wanting to be real sure. They had accumulated about $120 million, I think, that they were fearful of spending for fear they'd have to pay it back if they lost out on these various things. Before they could spend any, or did spend any, Felix Malin filed the famous Malin lawsuit, alleging that that was unconstitutional, that the money, in essence, should stay in the harbor. Then, strangely, there were some mysterious groups sprang up in the state, the Tulare County Fine Bureau got in the act. A group was organized out of San Diego called the California Tidelands Protective Association. Long Beach came under publicity assault all over the place that we were stealing the state's money. The Tulare, I think it was the Tulare County Fine Bureau, ended the case as an amicus curiae, a friend of the court, alleging that the intent was to transfer that money to the state, not the city. Then, to make a long story short, when the state Supreme Court finally ruled on it, they held that in a split bare majority decision that the intent of that legislation was to transfer the money to the state. They held that to give it to the city would be unconstitutional. They reasoned that the legislature always intends to act constitutionally, and the only way they could act constitutionally is to give this money to the state. So they ruled that Long Beach didn't own that money, that it had been freed from the trust, that immediately went to the state of California. They threw some dictum into that decision also that the Tidelands grant, that no city had any contractual rights that were enforceable against the state of California. and they said that the state at its pleasure could revoke any of these tag end grants. And this is like saying, you know, if I had deeded you title of this house and given it to you in fee simple, I had given you everything I owned here, it was yours and you had recorded it and that was that. It's like saying, but oh wait a minute, Irvin can take that back on this crazy principle. So they really upset the law governing the stability of all of the Thailand grants up and down the coast. The state hasn't done this. They haven't challenged any of the grants or revoked any of it, but they have the power to do it. And that really puts a cloud over the entire coastline. And it reverses the former state policy. The original policy of the state was that it didn't have the money to develop these harbors and develop the coastline the way it should be developed. But the cities, being the parties in interest on the scene, would have the money and the ability and the knowledge to do it. So therefore, to get the coastline developed, they just started greening sections of it to the various cities. Mm-hmm. LA, San Francisco, the county of San Francisco, San Diego, all of them. After all was discovered, the state began to reserve the mineral rights and not give those by Pearl Seal Beach right next door. They didn't get the mineral rights. And they got their tidelands grant. So that completely undid things, and we were at the mercy of the legislature, and of course legislation went in immediately to take this money away and threatening to take away everything.
Yeah, could you talk about who supported the Tulare Farm Bureau, and how did these people get involved?
Well, yeah, but that was I'd like to back up on this. This is how Jim Carlin got into the program. I, at that time, had been retained by the Press Telegram, the independent Press Telegram it was in, and worked.
So you weren't working for the Harbor anymore. You started working for the Press Telegram.
No, I think I've been working for them as well. I had quite an array of clients. In other words, I didn't have just a single client. I could go back and figure all that out for you, but I'm not quite sure when I started to work for the newspapers. I worked for them I was retained by them for about 16 years. They worked on all kinds of assignments. I think they really appreciated what I had done on the Tidelands issue. And got into all kinds of things for them and different subjects and ultimately on subsidence for them.
Well, why don't you finish up with who is behind the National
okay.
Farm Bureau?
When the stories and the attacks began to appear coming from crazy places like the Tulare County Farm Bureau and this front organization called the California Tidelands Protective Association, two things. One, I knew from my own experience having registered as a lobbyist for the Harbor Commission, for that I was also a lobbyist for the City Council in Sacramento, and I was a lobbyist up there for the newspapers at one time. So I knew the lobbying registration laws. And I knew that these people who were demanding legislation and trying to influence the legislature to take the oil away from Long Beach hadn't registered. So I went to the newspaper, number one, and urged that they assign a good investigative reporter to dig into this. They came back and said they decided to do that, and it would be this man, Jim Fallon. And Jim came down to my office, and we began to get acquainted. And ultimately became good friends. In fact, he was best man ultimately at my last wedding. Also at that time, the Bar Association was headed by an attorney by the name of Will Winston, and Will was a good friend of mine, and I had briefed him on what was happening and that this law was being violated, and suggested to him that the Bar Association could very properly petition the Attorney General to investigate these lobbying activities, find out if the law had been violated, and if it had been, to prosecute and convict and sentence the violators. So in the course of that, it took a lot of pressure on Pat Brown to get him to do it. He didn't respond to the initial appeal from the Bar Association. They made a second appeal to him that was really strong and demanding that he get into the act, with which she then appointed an investigator to work on this. The investigator had the power of the Attorney General's office to subpoena bank accounts. And they traced the money that was being paid to the lobbyists back to its source, which was the Southern California Gas Company. And the reason I think that they were in the act, why they got into it, there was an effort made at one time by the Press Telegram to annex Lakewood before Lakewood became a city. And the city at that time had the city-owned gas department. They could see the city taking over one of their big customer areas, and they're losing a lot of business because the city would then take over the gas facilities and use their own gas department and push Southern Cal Gas out of the way. This was always my theory on why Southern Cal Gas got into it. But they were financing some of these groups and used an attorney in Los Angeles as the go-between. I can't remember his name. I want to say Sullivan, but I don't know if that was his name or not. Phelan would know. That's how we disclosed, that's how we got at who was behind all of this stuff and where the attacks on the city were coming from. None of the other port cities wanted to really help Long Beach. And most of the other cities they were our friends in the federal battle. But when there's a chance that the oil money in Long Beach would be turned over to the state and they might get a chunk of it, they weren't in our corner anymore. So we didn't really have any friends in the state of California, even among the port cities. The upshot of all of that was compromise legislation was put in, which gave the state half the dough. And the city ended up turning it over to them. And the state also assumed the position of the owner of the tide and submerged lands and oversee everything that goes on down there in keeping with that decision of the state Supreme Court. Terribly bad decision because they in effect rewrote history. They said that the intent of the legislation that Long Beach itself prepared, that our legislators put in, that we assured the governor what we were going to do with it. The intent was crystal clear. It was to spend the money in Long Beach. The state Supreme Court held that the intent was to spend it, to turn it over to the state. And they did it by really artifice and they stole it. Pretty much the way the U.S. Supreme Court started out to steal the submerged resources of the states along the coastline. I heard I told you about one other crazy theory I had that, and you might as well get this in here too. When the original Tidelands decision came out of the U.S. Supreme Court, it affected an area where there were no voters to speak of, submerged lands off the shorelines around the coastline of the nation. And it applied to the resources in the bed of the ocean. Later on, there was a case in, I think, North Carolina, and it began with a dispute between the two Carolinas over who should license fishermen operating off the coasts. Well, the dispute may have been between one state and the federal government. The state Supreme Court ruled in that case that since Uncle Sam had a paramount power over this area, that if he wished to assert it, he could take control of the fishing industry and the fish resources of the ocean. And that if he wished to assert his power, that then yes, he would license the fishermen. In the absence of that, the state could do it. Then there was a later case down south of here in the Santa Margarita River where the Interior Department filed a lawsuit contesting that anybody owning mineral rights, or water rights along the Santa Margarita River no longer owned them because the Interior Department owned them. And they were using the same Paramount Power Doctrine. And what was happening, the legal principle of Paramount Power over resources, where you could take them without compensation, began in the floor of the ocean here on the West Coast. It was subsequently enlarged and applied to Louisiana and Texas. Then over in the East Coast, you had the fishing case where the doctrine came out of the floor of the ocean into the waters above, applying to the fish. And then the subsequent case where they tried to come up the Santa Margarita River